Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello, it's Tuesday, February 27th, and welcome to Paper Cuts, where we ask the papers for a chat, delve into their problems, and then realise it simply is what it is. We've been delighted to see how many of you have signed up to our Paper Cuts Supporters Club. We know that times are tough, and we really are grateful for your support. As you know, we spend all the money we get on papers, producers, and partying. Plus, there's Jason Hazley's expenses claim for all those late-night drives to Epping Forest, taken for podcast research purposes. If you too would like to get ad-free episodes, a special extra funny bit, maybe even a Paper Cuts mug or a t-shirt, then why not check out the show notes and click on back.papercutsshow.com to see how you can become a Paper Cuts supporter. Now here are the headlines for today's edition. Don looks back in anger, Trump takes aim at Prince Harry. Cash and carry the can, Hunt gets tax cut warning. No sex for me please, a journalist goes to an orgy but doesn't get involved. Welcome to Paper Cuts, we read the papers so you don't have to. Thanks for joining us on Paper Cuts, where we marry the papers sight unseen, then realise very quickly that we want a divorce. Joining me today is comedy writer Jason Hazley. Hi, Jason.
Morning.
And we also have CNN contributor Holly Thomas. Hello, Holly.
Hello.
So, what have we got on the front pages today? Holly, let's start with you and the serious papers.
Yes, so on the cover of The Times, we have, "I'm proof that Britain isn't racist," says Sunak. So that's Rishi Sunak trying to de-escalate the Islamophobia row. Big shout from the man who reappointed Suella Braverman as Home Secretary there. Mm. On the cover of The Eye, we have, "Hunt has 6 days to find tax cuts to save Tory MPs." So this is the story about Jeremy Hunt wanting to lower taxes, discovering that actually it's a bit more expensive than he might have predicted. We've got more on that later. The Guardian, same story. Experts warn Hunt over dubious case for unfunded budget tax cuts. And then on The Telegraph, we have, "Army wives force MOD U-turn over housing." So this is like a really weird backlash over army wives flipping out basically over the idea that army personnel be awarded housing based on the size of their families as opposed to rank. They want to stick to rank.
Okay, yeah. So that sounds very unpractical.
It's a really odd,
it's an odd
really
story,
odd
isn't it?
Story.
The reason it kicked off is because it means that there are people with stripes on their shoulders who might get moved into smaller accommodation, yeah. And they're going, "Don't you dare do that to us!" And at the time when the army is struggling to recruit, they don't want to upset the, you know, rock the boat.
Yeah. Threatening to quit, apparently.
It's an excuse for the Daily Telegraph to get the words "army wives" on the front of it, which it loves. It just loves that, doesn't
That's
it?
That's their favourite type of wag, isn't it? They can pull into a story. Jason, what have you got on the front pages?
The Daily Mail is also doing its bit to try and excuse Lee Anderson. MPs, Gaza protests leave police less able to stop crime. I'm just going to pause on this for a minute because there's a lot of excusing going on. There really is. There's like, "Oh, he was clumsy, he was infelicitous, he was wrong." Stop it. Stop excusing this. By doing this, by excusing the rubbish that comes out of the overflowing toilet that is Lee Anderson, you are building a permission structure for hate speech. Stop it. It's got to stop. Rant over. Mirror. 100 kids a day are victims of sick online blackmailers. Very depressing story indeed. The Sun has "Friends and Traitors," which is a reference to Courtney Cox off of Friends, who might be going into the Traitors. Very exciting.
That's definitely the big news that should be on the front of The Sun.
Again, The Sun. I know we keep saying this, but The Sun is not really interested in the news anymore, is it? And The Daily Star, proud to love animals, has a comestible special today. Sing for your supper. Boffin reveals we should serenade our food.
Yes.
Okay, no, Brad, actually give me a little bit of what they are on about there.
There is a life coach and her name is Radhi Devlukia Shetty. And among her tips for living joyfully, she suggests singing to your food as you cook it.
What should we sing? Because this could go in all sorts of directions.
Well, it's interesting you should ask that, actually, because the Star has suggested the top five food songs, which include Korma Chameleon, Give Peas a Chance, Here Comes the Bun, you know, and on and on and on. Yeah. So there we go.
All praise the Daily Star.
All hail the Daily Star.
Donald Trump has decided to have a pop at Prince Harry, and obviously the papers bloody love it. The former president said if he were president, he wouldn't protect Harry, and added he betrayed the Queen. That's unforgivable. Holly, this is a really strange story. So can we get into the context of what he means by protecting Harry? He doesn't mean sort of, you know, actually looking after him like some sort of weird blonde guard dog, does he? What's going on?
So basically, a conservative think tank, which is called the Heritage Foundation, is seeking the publication of Prince Harry's immigration form. And they're arguing that basically he shouldn't be allowed to enter America legally because he's taken drugs, according to his memoir, Spare. The Biden administration is saying, well, that doesn't really constitute proof that he takes drugs. Like, you know, you can make a claim in a book that you've had a spliff. It's not the same as concrete evidence that you've taken drugs. But Trump is saying, no. If I'm president, Harry's out of the country. So, yeah, that's basically the deal. And he's also said that he wouldn't pay for the Sussexes' security protection. The Sussexes have responded saying they weren't really anticipating that. That's fine. They're happy to keep footing their own bills. But yeah, basically, there's some suggestion that this could be a bit of a response from Trump to Meghan Markle getting involved in the campaigning for 2020 election. And then also, apparently, Prince Harry once responded to a prank call from someone pretending to be Greta Thunberg and said something like Trump had blood on his hands for the handling of the coal industry. So this feels like a bit of a personal vendetta from Trump.
A personal vendetta from Trump.
I know.
Surely not. Are you suggesting Donald Trump's a petty man?
holding a grudge, Donald Trump.
I'm not sure about that one. Well, this kind of came from an offhand remark at CPAC, didn't it, where he just said this, and he says loads of bumbling bullshit every time he gets on stage. But how have the papers taken this? I mean, the Telegraph seemed to have really gone to town on what seems to be a sentence from Donald Trump, and it's made the entire of their insert and a two-page spread.
Yes, and half of the two-page spread is the headline, which is, I wouldn't protect him. He betrayed the Queen. That's unforgivable. He would be on his own if it was down to me. Donald Trump. They've spoken to a renowned American lecturer on the US Constitution.
That's almost like, you know, when you go to a provincial town and there's best kebab. Yeah. And you know it's certainly not the best kebab. And that's what I would assume on this. If they're so renowned, I don't think they'd be talking in this bollocks, maybe.
It's sort of their equivalent of your boffins. Yeah. No hate to the Star boffins. Love them. This renowned lecturer has said, the powers of the president are formidable. So incisive stuff from that guy. All very useful.
He must be very renowned to know that.
And crucially, the Telegraph has also noted that this could make things very awkward for the royal family, which is a topic close to all of our hearts, of course. So basically, because the king is obliged to welcome officials from overseas, if Trump's re-elected, he'll have to, you know, wine and dine him, even if he's kicked Haz out of the country and back to London, which does the king want that or not? Hard to say. So,
yeah, who knows? So Piers Morgan, talking about petty men with personal vendettas, he's weighed in on this as well, hasn't he? What is he saying in The Sun? What's that all about?
So, yeah, in the sort of Venn diagram uniting Piers Morgan and Donald Trump, I think one powerful factor is her late majesty, it would seem. So basically,
and being wankers.
who's to say? So basically, Piers caught up with Donald Trump, or was, I think, sort of saw him depart the country after he met the Queen, when he met her as president. And Piers says, for sheer unbridled joy, I've never seen anything to quite match Donald Trump's beaming face when he returned to Air Force 1 after meeting Queen Elizabeth II for the first time at Windsor Castle. And then he apparently told him, "She is so sharp, so wise, so beautiful. She's a very special person." So, yeah, basically, Piers notes that Trump's reverence for the Queen actually has a very long tale. So apparently, in The Art of the Deal, for some reason, he recounts watching the Queen's coronation in 1953. And apparently, Trump's mother also very much enjoyed the experience. Trump said she was just enthralled by the pomp and circumstance. So, yeah, Trump, long-term fan of the Queen, and, yeah, taking it upon himself to, I don't know, defend her honour in a really weird sideways way.
Yeah. Posthumous defence of the Queen is really what is necessary at the moment. Jason, we spoke about this a little bit in the headlines. We've spoken about this every day lately, it seems. Does the sun just seem to get further and further from reality by the day? I mean, Piers Morgan is just on a tirade here, and the front page has this, and it feels like there's probably just more important stuff they could be talking about.
There must be more important stuff. Piers Morgan's piece is, apart from anything else, it's a bloody awful bit of writing. It's terrible. "When I interviewed Trump for Piers Morgan Uncensored in 2022, writes Piers Morgan, he scoffed, "Harry is whipped. I won't use the full expression, but Harry is whipped like no person I think I've ever seen." Yeah, now, we know what goes in front of whipped, don't we?
Yeah, far bit from Trump to use that kind of language.
No. Yeah, quite, yeah. No.
Definitely not in front of the Queen or in conversations regarding the Queen as well, at least.
Yeah. But you know this kind of notion that Trump, well, as Trump has said, hasn't he? He said that he said to people, "I'll be your retribution, I'll be your revenge." And there's a lot of revenge stuff going on in here, including from Morgan himself, who concludes this piece, "How ironic if it's Donald Trump who has the last laugh on the treacherous little weasel and tells him you're fired because of the despicable way he treated his grandmother, the Queen." Thanks for those last two words there, Piers. Just in case I hadn't remembered who Harry's grandmother was. I'm going to put this in some, interestingly, unhelpful context. At CPAC this weekend, I mean, Trump now gets up at these events and talks, extemporizes for up to an hour and a half. I think he spoke for 90 minutes at CPAC. He talks bollocks, just absolutely rains bollocks down on people. Among the things he said this weekend were, he said, "To the black population of America, they're indicting me for you." He said, "There are languages coming into the US that no one's ever heard." And he also said, and good luck joining these two dots, "People in Beverly Hills pay so much tax that they only brush their teeth once a day." So we're not talking about an intellectual giant here. We are talking about someone who just talks bollocks. And what's happened here is that Piers Morgan and The Telegraph have caught some of those bollocks and turned them into print.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
In
In a recurring theme in politics, the Tories want to cut taxes again, but they don't know how to fund actually cutting taxes. But they're saying they're going to do it again anyway, because they want a very small number of people to vote for them at some point. So Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has also now been warned that he might need to think twice before doing this in his upcoming budget, which is next week. So Holly, what is Hunt being told here and by who?
So basically, Hunt is really hoping that he can cut 2p off personal taxes in next week's budget without having to cut spending. The IFS says that isn't possible.
No.
Essentially, if you cut money from one place, you have to find it somewhere else. And the indications are it would come from unprotected government departments. So yeah, basically in his autumn statement last November, Hunt committed to an increase in Whitehall spending of about 1% above inflation. So yeah, I mean, I'm going to find more money. However, we're going to be taking less money. Basically, it doesn't add up in a very fundamental way. Something's got to give in the next week.
Yeah. So is it going to be basically just sort of more austerity? Is that really what we could be looking at here?
Yes, from certain departments. The IFS reckons he'll need to find about £35 billion from departments like kind of higher education, maybe defence, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it says that there's no credibility that he can announce tax cuts under the current circumstances. So yeah, he's kind of stuck, basically.
Yeah.
It's not doable.
What is it suggest he might do, though? What is it that they're kind of touting, and what are the Tories pushing for?
So Damien Green, who's the chair of the One Nation Caucus, is saying that the best way to grow the economy is to cut taxes. And basically what he could do, what Hunt could do, is cut 1p off the basic rate of income tax and then or introduce a further cap to national insurance. So I don't really see how that makes much of a difference. If you can't afford 2p, you probably can't afford 1p either.
Yeah, none of it really seems to make very much sense to me. Jason, does this feel like they're just, the Tories are failing to read the room in any sort of way, and also just failing on all fronts, really, isn't it?
100% failing to read the room. In fact, there was the Fairness Foundation published the results of a survey 4 days ago that said that 16% of the population want tax cuts. Less than one in five people. So okay. This is like, who are you appealing to? Well, obviously, trying to score some extra votes in the forthcoming election.
Yeah.
The maths is appalling. I mean, apart from the fact that, like, government debt is going up every month anyway, the Resolution Foundation said, they did the crunch of numbers, and they said cutting the basic rate of income tax by 1p while maintaining the personal allowance freeze next year would mean anyone earning less than £38,000 will see their personal tax bills rise. So this actually doesn't work out. When you shake it all out, you go, oh, so it's not actually saving most people any money at all. And also, most of them don't want this.
Yeah.
And at a time when you've got things like Birmingham going bankrupt as a city, you know, boy, do we not need tax cuts. We need to get more tax from somewhere and throw it back into the public realm where it's badly needed.
The headlines are the delectable sandwich filling of the papers, and boy, do we have a BLT for you today. Jason, what tasty morsels have you spotted in the newspaper pages?
Well, in The Star, on page 10, we have the story that Great British Railways, which is a new nationalised organisation which is going to take over the railways but hasn't done so yet, is employing people who aren't doing enough. This is because you have to lay the tracks for something like this. So they've set up this organisation. There are people there some of whom are just having one meeting a day, apparently. And the headline under this is the Great Train Jobbery.
Jobbery sounds quite rude.
It does. It's got. Now, meanwhile, in the Daily Star, from that front page story about people singing to their food, the full story is covered on page 7 with the brilliant headline. And I love these ones where I get a chance to sing. Hello, is it meat you're looking for?
Lovely. Although I'm really, there's my sort of sub-editor sense of twitching at me there. They've got an ellipsis, which is only two dots.
I know, two dots.
Loses all
Two dots.
All sort of credibility is completely gone there.
There's also a little sidebar story here about the price of hot cross buns going up under the excellent headline, Hot and Cross at Bun Hike.
Holly, what have you got? So you've got the Star first, don't you?
The Star has a very, very tiny story that really packs a punch. It says a food lover has set an eating challenge record after demolishing a 30-inch burrito in just 11 minutes. So that's more than 2 inches a minute. Actually, wait, now I say that, that doesn't seem that fast.
No, that's the thing. When you first said it, I was so fit, and then I just thought, that really doesn't sound
30 inches. So that's like, what, 2.5 feet? Actually, you know what?
So it's...
That is quite big.
In how long?
In 11 minutes.
I could do that.
I could do that?
Yeah. Oh, you know.
Well, that sounds,
sorry. Yeah.
That sounds like a subscriber content.
That's that first live
waiting
event.
For
yeah, yeah. We're doing like a Papercuts mukbang or whatever it's called.
Headline is, tough act to swallow. Solid.
Nice.
The Sun has another food-related story. A lot of food today in the papers. This one's quite depressing. It's about how potatoes have just gotten much more expensive due to have bad harvests and general shortages. Headline is, chips not cheap.
It's not terrible. The thing that I'm finding with that, though, that it can just be a throwback to last week, that there was a headline, I think, in the Star, which was Spuddy Hell, about nearly the exact same thing. And they've got the news a bit late and thought, we just need to try and get our own headline here.
Yeah, and it's just not rolling for time, no.
I'm David Baddiel. I'm a writer and a comedian and a Jew.
I'm Saeeda Varsi. I'm a businesswoman and a politician and a Muslim.
Jews and Muslims always seem to be in the news or on the news. Lots of people talk about us, and this is us talking about ourselves.
The kind of things that people say don't touch, we are going to go there.
I mean, I think Jews and Muslims are talking about these things, but I think they're not talking about them together because they're worried that if they do, sparks might fly. A Muslim and a Jew go there.
Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Now we get to the strange side of the papers, where they're always obsessed with life's highs and lows. And today they've got a very bizarre low point. So under the headline, Silly Wonka, the Daily Mail discusses the world's worst immersive Willy Wonka experience. Jason, please talk me through this.
Right, okay. So there is an event organiser called House of Illuminati, which set up an immersive Willy Wonka experience, for which tickets were £35 per head.
That is quite steep,
I would
say.
Yeah. Yes, yep. And what they were expecting was what the poster promised, and the poster was generated by AI. So it was not actually representative of anything in the experience itself, just as well, really, because the experience was absolute shit. It's quite clear from the photos of it, and there's a brilliant little STV news report, which you should look at on your social media feeds, of just this half-empty warehouse with a few tables here and there and the odd sort of prop shaped like a teddy bear or a giant suite. I mean, it is just incredibly depressing, but also terribly funny. Not if you pay £35 a ticket. It's not very funny. No. So people absolutely lost their shit, and the police were called.
Yeah, what are some of the standout quotes in this? Because I know there's some people are pretty angry.
Underwhelming was an understatement, wrote one mother. Embarrassing doesn't even cut it. I paid for Willy Wonka and got Billy Bonkers. Not sure that quite works, actually. I don't think she's got a future at the Star, that mother.
No, I really do enjoy just how much it doesn't quite work. The place does look fucking diabolical.
It really does. Warehouse
with some benches, like a really sort of depressing canteen. And then they've got an arch, but it also looks like a kind of, I don't know, sixth form drama production play. Holly, what stood out to you about this Wonka story?
Well, as far as I could gather, they only hired one actor for it. And rather than have them play Willy Wonka, who you'd think would be the kind of obvious choice, had one Oompa Loompa. And she was given a 15-page script, I think it was. So essentially people attended a monologue by a woman in a green wig. That feels like an incredibly strange allocation of resources. I don't know who sort of like cracked their knuckles and were like, I know what this needs. It's like a really, really long script by a character who doesn't traditionally really say much in Wonka. So yeah, I thought that was a particularly odd move.
I like to imagine it's like Oompa Loompa beat poetry. That'd be quite good. Like, so, just stood there like mega chewing gum, just diving out throughout the whole thing. It just, yeah, it's it. I've got to say, I do quite love these disappointing event things. My weirdest one is I went to a séance in Grantham.
What?
With my mum. Yeah. We went to a séance, which was just quite ludicrous. And the same woman thought that family members came to her three times. And I thought, unless this village hall is a burial ground for your family, they quite clearly cannot have. So, yeah, I like going to these sort of weird, strange...
God, I'd love to go to a séance. That sounds great.
It was very bizarre. Well, right, so we've talked about this event let down. Let's move on.
This is the out-of-season version of the disappointing Christmas thing, you know, where there's a car park with a plastic reindeer in the corner, you know, it's that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, which, you know, you just need every so often the tabloids. But so we've had this event let down. Now let's move on to another event let down. And basically, in the Times, there is a story about a reporter who went to an orgy and somehow managed to not have sex at the orgy, but then write about the orgy and call it their first time at an orgy, which to me... I don't think you've really done an orgy if you've not done anything at the orgy. You've just kind of... I don't know. Holly, can you talk me through this one?
So I found this kind of moving in all the wrong ways.
Found the experience moving in all the wrong ways, hence not shagging at an orgy.
I feel a bit sad. So basically, the writer, Lucy Rober, she describes herself as, I think she mentions she's 48 and she's a divorced mother of three teenagers. And she's basically, you know, quite open to the idea of something that might, you know, spice up her life. And she's also, crucially, the new editor of The Erotic Review, which she's relaunching as a print magazine. So, you know, she's got, you know, a lot of skin in this game, so to speak. She enlists a friend, a school friend, to go with her to a killing kittens party, which basically sounds like a lot of people kind of hoping to relive a sort of Saltburn-y type experience. They go to a big mansion in the countryside. They all wear masks and, you know, get together in kind of playrooms and stuff. So Lucy sort of says she was open and curious, but basically she sort of gets there and is immediately, it's very clear, incredibly uncomfortable. She sort of stands with her friend watching things. And apparently, and then until at one point, her friend kind of gives her a look and is like, we've got to go in one of these rooms, Lucy. She goes, she describes seeing a complicated melange and immediately averting her eyes. It's sort of, you know, it's relatively positive. You know, she mentions that the MC was talking about consent and, you know, there seemed to be sort of guidelines to ensure everyone's doing it right. But yeah, it's very, very obvious that she feels incredibly awkward and you can't help but get the feeling that rather than take the friend as a kind of like, we're in this together, like, let's get involved, the friend's almost there as her excuse for to not get involved. She's an observer, but she doesn't want to be kind of hanging around on the against the wall kind of by herself watching people.
As an intrepid journalist, though, are you disappointed by the lack of involvement here?
Yeah, to be honest, I sort of feel like if you're going to write one of these stories, I think you have to at least, there maybe should be a realistic prospect of you getting involved. And to be honest, I don't think that there was with our Lucy. It tends to be a bit of a theme with these pieces as well. They kind of come along about once a month or two and no one ever shags.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the piece where that, you know, they dive into that melange and get in amongst
what you want,
it.
Isn't it.
Yeah.
This is like, because the whole I made my excuses and left thing, that's been like a tabloid go-to for decades and decades now, hasn't it? And it's still going on here, but in the Times now. I was very struck, by the way, by the whole going with a school friend thing, because in the last paragraph, I think it is, of the story, she says, "My friend was pleased because she'd at least snogged the DJ." And it was the word snogged that made me think, this does sound like a very kind of weirdly teenage perspective you've got here. But also, if you read it pejoratively, like I'm about to, it does sound teenage. "Over the following 2.5 hours, I went back upstairs another 5 times. I leant on door frames, trying to understand the patterns of behaviour." What are you doing in there? I'm just trying to understand the patterns of behaviour.
Really ethnographic sort of study of shagging there going on.
But also from the editor of the Erotic Review, this is a deeply unerotic bit of writing. Mm. It really is.
Yeah, I'm really curious to sort of see what the Erotic Review's output is like. It is quite literally like the Erotic Review. Like, I'm just going to review the eroticism here without in any way partaking. It's a kind of David Attenborough approach. I sort of, like, you think back to, this is such a weird comparison, but you know how like Blue Peter presenters, like the entire point of being a Blue Peter presenter is you have to be game to do absolutely anything. Yeah. You sort of feel like if one of those guys got there, they wouldn't have lost 5 minutes. They'd be like in a threesome, no problem. You know.
Well, Holly, this is genius. Sending Blue Peter to a killing kittens party. It's got to be done.
Yeah, yeah. That's the way. You get a Blue Peter badge for every. Every new kink you tick off.
The lack of eroticism is very much underlined when you read this on the Times by the by what happens underneath. It says related articles, and the first one comes in with the headline, "My Nights of Endometriosis Agony."
Yeah, no, this woman needs to have a chat with Joe Biden. Get her head in the game.
Yeah.
Shagger Biden.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of today's Paper Cuts. Thank you very much to Holly for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you to Jason.
Thank you.
Remember, we're out 5 days a week and we would be really grateful for your support to carry on making sense of the papers for you every weekday. We are a 100% independent outfit. There is no big media owner behind us and we spend around £600 a month on papers alone. It would be fantastic if you could chip in a little to keep Paper Cuts on the road. For as little as £3 a month, you can get 20 episodes a month without adverts. Support us with a little more and you can get extended episodes with extra material, plus the coveted Paper Cuts mugs and t-shirts, which are occasionally modelled by our panel but aren't today. They're very much letting the side down. Follow the show notes to back.papercutsshow.com. That's back.papercutsshow.com to find out more. Our beloved supporters also get a shout out on the show, and here are some now for you.
It's grazie mille from me to Chris Payne and Claire Vaughan.
Thank you so much to Simon David Demon and Ashley Boyle.
Thank you very much from me to Edwina Nolan and James Dib Simkin. I've been Jacob Jarvis and you've been listening to Paper Cuts on a day when The Star revealed that parents are choosing baby names based on what would be a good Instagram handle. That's why I'm calling my firstborn Brexit Bloke 420. See you tomorrow.
Paper Cuts was written and presented by Podmaster's Managing Editor, Jacob Jarvis, with Jason Hazley and Holly Thomas. The assistant producer was Adam Wright, and the audio producer was me, Jade Bailey. Music is by Simon Williams, socials by Kieran Leslie, design by Jim Parrott, with original art by Modern Toss. The executive producer is Martin Boytosh, and the group editor is Andrew Harrison. Paper Cuts is a Podmaster's production.